interrupting the current neo-colonial climate challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy starved, alien invaded, nuclear glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting episode BTWRLM570. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so you must and have to get behind the woodshed. The only way we're going to do this, you can't just let someone else be your leader. You have to protect your rights. You have to assert them, or you have none. You have to assert your property first, or you have no rights. If you have never heard that, it's important. We may have a long-sought answer breaking this week. The conundrum, is it freed or fried? Pending appeals and short of the electric chair, it's pronounced fried, not freed. Sam Bankman Fried, sentenced to 25 years in prison. The disgraced crypto mogul orchestrated one of the largest financial frauds in history, government prosecutors argued. The sentence was handed down by New York Judge Lewis Kaplan on Thursday. At 25 years, the sentence is half the length of the prison term recommended by prosecutors, but significantly harsher than the 6 years requested by Bankman Fried's lawyers. Explaining why he was locking Bankman Fried away for more than 2 decades, Kaplan told the court that there is a risk that this man will be in a position to do something very bad in the future, and it's not a trivial risk. The 32-year-old entrepreneur was convicted in November of 7 criminal counts, including wire fraud, securities fraud and conspiracy, and money laundering. The charges stemmed from Bankman Fried's time running FTX, a now defunct cryptocurrency exchange. So good, we got that clarified. It's fried, not freed, yet. Remember, that underpinned the whole Democratic parties, or the ones that were found out, promoting the politics as well. But something else just clarified, FLCCC Alliance statement on the settlement reached in case against DHHS for telling the public to stop it regarding taking ivermectin to prevent and treat COVID-19. It stated that the FDA acted outside of its authority and illegally interfered with doctors' ability to practice medicine with an aggressive effort to stop the use of ivermectin to prevent and treat COVID-19. The case was later dismissed by the court, citing the FDA had, quote, sovereign immunity, giving the agency absolute protection from any wrongdoing or harm in directing the public, including health professionals and patients, not to use ivermectin, a drug that has received full FDA approval for human use. This is an international drug, I believe, too. And it's really cheap everywhere else. In September last year, the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit reversed the lower court's dismissal of the lawsuit by ruling that the FDA is not a physician. It has authority to inform, announce, and apprise, but not to endorse, denounce, or advise. The ruling goes on to say that the, quote, FDA can inform, but it has identified no authority allowing it to recommend consumers stop taking medicine, close quote. And finally, quote, even tweet-sized doses of personalized medical advice are beyond the FDA's statutory authority. A little bit of dig there from the judiciary. Tweet-sized doses of this medicine that they're putting on us. So there we go. I don't know what else we have to say here. But we can continue to read. And I suggest, like all of these stories that I come up with here, to investigate what they're saying, dig deeper. These links are just basic, touching the literally tips of the iceberg of the information. So all this is just as identified for you, and as I reported, the Lisbon court in Portugal found relative to doctors. And again, this is a long-term thing I was telling you all. You could see it yourself. Just go to the communicable disease law. It's all in the black and white. The government's set up, in large part, it's constitutional. And you just have to see how that works and not try to invent the wheel, if you will. Because in this regard, the duty was not on you. The duty was on the officials. And they failed at every turn. And so this is a confirmation. If we didn't already hear it from Portugal, a foreign country, already years ago, back in, remember, 2020, this court comes in and says, yeah, the doctor is the authority. And I told you that the FDA is just advisory. All they can do is suggest. They have no authority whatsoever. Why am I able to say that? You don't even hear some of the foundation behind this. The United States of America has reserved powers to the states. Health matters are one of those reserved powers. And it's one of those things, if we keep forcing it back, that we'll knock this WHO thing out because they can't come in. Remember, if the FDA has only advisory capacity, what do you think the WHO is going to have? Even less. So they got nothing and nothing more. And so we're back to it. The doctor can help. There were some things that you'd have to be careful with the doctors. Remember, a lot of them bought in, but the communicable disease law required a report of a suspicion of the communicable disease. Then the test came in and the public oversight came in to validate it. But the treatment, the position of that was always held to decide by the patient, never the officials. So you can choose what treatment. Remember, too, before I go too far, I don't want to really go too deep on this, that the ivermectin being recognized early on by the CDC would have invalidated those authorizations and killed the COVID swindle. Absolutely. So we can see, and now it's determined the agency can issue advisories, and the health care providers and doctors are the implementing end of the care. We see the CDC issues a health advisory over low vaccination rates across the United States. United States Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, sent out a health advisory on December 14th regarding low vaccination rates for influenza, respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, and COVID-19. The agency stated that the relatively low vaccination rates could lead to more severe disease and increased health care capacity strain in the coming weeks, and reports of increased respiratory disease have been described in multiple countries recently. Healthcare providers should administer influenza, COVID-19, and RSV immunizations now to patients, and it recommended. Note here, what's the hesitancy? It says, however, recent surveys have shown that Americans appear to be showing signs of vaccine fatigue. Well, good. It isn't hesitancy, is it? It's common sense. Finally, coming to those that survived the first attack, and understanding here that COVID-19 is symptoms. They're not treating an infectious agent. You've never seen the infectious agent. It was never demonstrated, and non-fraudulently so. They proposed one. If you looked at it, it was novel. It wasn't a natural infectious agent. It was a synthetic protein, and then it was a construct. So, but we keep looking about what's this, the people are three quarters are not really hesitant. They just don't see its purpose. Maybe we have some other reason here that's a reason not to trust vaccines, however, as those of us that have been talking, I am hoping we are part of the message, getting the word out and starting to cause people now to question. And we got them past their fear. They got themselves past the fear and are able to look a little bit more objectively as we read. The U.S. state takes Pfizer to court over COVID-19 shot. The pharmaceutical giant misled the public about the vaccine's effectiveness and sought it to silence critics, the Texas lawsuit claims. The Texas Attorney General filed a lawsuit against the pharmaceutical giant Pfizer on Thursday, alleging that the company misrepresented the effectiveness of COVID-19 vaccine and sought to suppress public discussion of the product's failures. The lawsuit follows a six-month investigation by Attorney General Ken Paxton into alleged gain-of-function research by Pfizer and fellow COVID-19 vaccine developers Moderna and Johnson & Johnson. Remember, Johnson & Johnson got kicked out as well. They had the adenovirus, similar to the Sputnik V over in Russia. Pfizer engaged in false, deceptive, and misleading acts and practices by making unsupported claims regarding the company's COVID-19 vaccine in violation of Texas Deceptive Trade Practices Act, Paxton said in a statement, arguing the company illicitly made billions of dollars in profit. Remember, these are the same people that did not step up to protect their populations, to guarantee and require that their communicable disease law was followed so we would avoid all of this at all. Paxton specifically challenged Pfizer's claim that its shot was 95% effective against the novel coronavirus, arguing that this was a statistical trick called relative risk reduction, which the USDA and Food and Drug Administration admitted might mislead consumers by presenting a treatment as more effective than it is. The clinical trial data showed that the shot actually decreased the likelihood of contracting COVID-19 just 0.85%, the lawsuit said. So we'll see how these things influence people to think more clearly, whether or not all this goes anywhere. Understand, they're talking about contracting COVID-19. That's wrong, too. This attorney general's wrong. You don't contract symptoms. You contract an infectious agent. And so all these cases are actually wrong, but they're putting the notice out for people to start looking around and saying, finally, what they should have done in the beginning, maybe this is not for me. Again, it's with the doctor and the patient, ultimately. The whole world fell on its face on this one. And those of you listening behind the woodshed heard that you didn't have to be part of that crowd. And some of you I know did the work and found the same thing that I did. And I don't think anybody has come anywhere all this time. I don't care where I put this information, has come back and said that I've been incorrect. I believe maybe mostly people don't want to understand, want to do the work to see that, first of all. Secondly, I think that it shows that even medical doctors that were so touted for so-called protecting people failed right there. Why? Because they could have reported that they never reported a suspicion of a disease, a disease would have been the symptoms, and they would not have been held liable to that because they haven't seen that there's no report of any of their patients. This was really a simple answer, but moving into the next report here, showing this giant, well thought out attack and how they were going to, I told you they're going to do the cover up, they're going to do the cat box cover up, and you're not going to find that sneaky old thing on there. Now we saw how their everything, you know, died suddenly. Everybody looks at everything but the jabs. Here's another story just like that, and maybe these jab rates that we've talked about that the CDC is concerned with going down, maybe the rates will go even lower as the non-brain damaged people find out that the flu and COVID gene therapies have been combined in Moderna's new fraudulently promoted vaccine, where you remember also that there is no such thing as a communicable disease law and a vaccine for symptoms. Right, it's a vaccine for an infectious agent that's natural, that's an organic agent. Why they tried to do the zoonotic transfer nonsense. This didn't exist. This was always a synthetic novel lipidized protein. Right, so there's no such thing as a vaccine for seasonal flu as well, because it's seasonal. It's not considered communicable, even though everyone gets it. So as I've said for years, Operation Hindsight 2020. Understand and remember what that was. I'm not going to go through it again. I'm just touching base on, we're getting into the season, disease X is on the horizon, supposedly. Start to get your mind geared up to, you can defend yourself against, you don't have to have an opinion about all this. It's understood that they didn't serve the public. You don't even have to engage it. Avoid that train going to the station. Do not stand on those tracks. Now, hopefully the lower rate will come when they also, people start finding out about a binary weapons, as I've been talking about, and I think this next report indicates that, where they go off and they talk about something, and yet you start looking at everything within the story, and it lines up to mimic what we saw going on. As I see, over 1.8 million people are estimated to suffer from multiple sclerosis worldwide, affecting their cognitive function, emotional, motor, sensory, and visual areas after their immune system attacks their brain and spinal cord, according to the World Health Organization. According to a new study, two chemicals found in common household products like cleaning products, hair products, and furniture could be playing a role in development or neurological disorders like autism and multiple sclerosis. Remember, there was these neurological problems right after the jab and understood and in the search of these studies. Quote, we now show that specific chemicals in consumer products can directly harm oligodendrocytes, representing a previously unrecognized risk factor for neurological disease. So why did those who say the jabs are safe and effective, when it knew the novel lipid proteins encode the immune system to attack the brain and spinal cord, playing a role in the development of neurological disorders affecting cognitive dysfunction or cognitive function, emotional, motor, sensory, and visual areas? Or is it, as I have said, that safe and effective means the psychopaths are safe to get away with a substance that effectively kills or harms people as any bioweapon under the color of vaccine would? We can reach a little bit more here. Because only a fraction of neurological problems can be attributed to genetics alone, it is believed that unknown environmental factors play a major role in these health issues. You think? Like a fear-driven environment causing people to forego reason, law, self-defense, such as the great Kobe Swindle delivered at warp speed? Like that environment? That kind of environmental factor? A team of researchers from the Case Western Reserve University of Medicine examined over 1,800 common household chemicals and identified two that selectively damaged oligodendrocytes. The chemicals belong to two classes of organophosphate flame retardants and quaternary ammonium compounds, are called QUATs, or QACs. Now, aren't lympholytic quaternary ammonium vaccine compound constituents in vaccines? I think they are. Go look it up. And what about the organophosphates? They're also found in pesticides. You go read the articles, you start to see where they're at. These are not, I'm not saying, understanding that these aren't going to affect you. I'm saying what these things do in combination in your system surely looks like the effects of a jab. And then we find out here as you go through, it prepares the body to be dysfunctional when it's interfered with a second time. This is the binary weapon idea. So what if we found out that the organophosphates are used in war as nerve agents and are known agents of opportunity, and that they can cause rapid or delayed onset of serious health problems and even death, such as cardiac and neurological problems or cancer, maybe turbo here, and different from person to person. And then that as agents of opportunity, they might be considered a binary weapon antagonist to someone that is jabbed. Doesn't sound very similar to the consequences of the jab delivered at warp speed, does it? The debilitating binary part is delivered at the speed of consumerism on a case-by-case basis. So my inquiry on this story was, is this story identifying the culprit and a scapegoat, these chemicals, which a scapegoat to be blamed to cover the great COVID swindle and to cover it up. And so I guess fair minds can think differently, but I'm thinking that they are. And I think we've seen plenty of these stories coming along. You just have to chuckle at their hubris to try and cover up the obvious, and then claim there's no test, there's no nothing. They don't want to see it, you don't want to witness the crime, you're not going to see the crime, right? Even though there's an obligation and duty to do so. Well, there's supposed to be, but there isn't. And none of us stepped up to demand it in en masse, where everybody could point to the same problem. They did a good job of ferreting everybody, and that's where we went. And again, disappointed to see it, but we can see it now. And hopefully people will start thinking better. If something works for you, choose it. If it doesn't, don't be afraid to say no. If someone tries to force it, go find the duty. If they're officials, go find the duties and find their limitations. It's what I've been telling people to do all the time. Almost every broadcast has been exposing these things to put your mind into a thought pattern to really question authority. Truly question it. And you don't have to know a whole lot. You do have to do a little bit of reading. I told you, a lot of states only had 5 duties and obligations by the public health official, starting with the licensee doctor, which we found quickly. We found that that was the exclusive state agent, the licensee, that had exclusive care over you and could not be moved out, divested, displaced. So it's coming around what I've been saying, and that is just having this the techniques. We've heard to question authority. I'm for myself, at least, and for others that would listen and participate the way, you know, properly applying them. There's a way to challenge this authority talk. And I've been offering you people how to do that. Very few really want to pay attention. And some of you have embraced it and still run with it and realize that you see it. It's right there. So I thank you for doing that for yourself and just honoring me by believing what I've been saying to give you, again, the pathway. I'm just showing you where you might start. Where you end up, I'm not so sure, because I didn't go down and complete every pathway. I didn't have to. I was looking for how we've been corrupted as a people and how we continue to be corrupted. And that's giving me, I think, pretty decent insight. And all these organophosphates and all this other stuff and chemicals and chemistry and all that, with what we see this next story predating the great COVID swindle, population control, which was well underway before we got there. So we have a continuum going on. People seem to miss a bit. And again, not everybody. There's lots of people seeing it. But now we see more and more proof. We have global fertility crisis threatens 97% of the world population, scientists warn. Scientists from the Institute of Health Metrics and Evaluation have warned that a looming global fertility crisis that could reshape population dynamics by the end of the century. The findings published by The Lancet on Wednesday suggest the fertility rates are plummeting in almost all countries below the levels required to sustain current population numbers. This has been an ongoing thing. Understand, when you're looking at these, like The Lancet, look at what the deception that they did all during the great COVID swindle. Understand the source of why these population concerns are, and I'm going to get to a point that I think this is telling us, but we're going to look at the fact of it. And there's a lot of reasons why people are not having the kids, and that was also part of a plan. You destroy the family. You destroy the integration of a family and what family means and what it means to a society, or you just take away all that meaning. you have no cohesiveness and long-term conditions to grow your society properly. It becomes destroyed right from the beginning. That's another condition going on here. But this study, which draws on a data compiled between 1950 and 2021 as part of a global burden of disease injuries and risk factors study, paints an alarming picture. It predicts that by 2050, 76% of countries and territories, 155 out of 204 globally, will record fertility rates lower than replacement levels, a figure expected to soar to 97% in 198 countries by 2100. Well, just in time when we're going to have the oceans all boiled off, remember? But why are these people complaining? Why are these so-called scientists complaining about population reduction? Wouldn't you think that this is the future that they want sustainably? Population control? Oh, this is a progress report. Well, how do you like that? Learn something new every day. You start learning between the lines, you start seeing what this is. Notice, this is not to diminish the problem of replacement for countries. Russia has a big problem right now on that. That's their full, and they're promoting it right now, and they're promoting families. They're making the ludicrous assertions that people should be taxed if they don't have kids. Anyway, not for me to decide. But this is an important question, notwithstanding the invasion that they're doing from other countries to come in the United States. So, depletion, movement, migration is also part of the sustainability thing. If you look carefully, you don't have to look too carefully and read what's going on. But the great Covey swindle softened up the targets for the token citizenship that the Great Reset denied by all governments presented relative to this population control. You don't have as many people. You got easier control mechanisms. But we find right now already, fascinating, they deny this stuff just a couple years ago. Kanukistan links citizens' bank accounts to social credit score. So all the people that are left are going right to this point. The Canadian banking system will soon be transformed by a so-called open banking framework. Proponents are framing this as a more inclusive way for banks to easily share information and access user data. Sharing your data, folks, is what they're doing. As I said, watch out what happens on all this. However, the move will merge social standings with banking to provide governments and unelected bureaucrats with complete control over our finances. And in Kanukistan here, the Bill and Ted say, excellent. Let's read. Let's say it, just like this. Organization Open Banking Excellence, a World Bank partner that originated in the UK, boasts that it will incorporate social credit scores and bank information and likely digital cash and IDs in one convenient and inclusive place. OBE, which has reached 40 countries, aims to, quote, create exceptional platforms and content that promotes knowledge sharing, new thinking, and partnerships within the industry, catalyzing the adoption of open finance and data for better financial inclusion worldwide. It's about having the fairer, more inclusive, more open society, said Helen Child, founder of the Open Banking Excellence. Excellence, folks. Excellent. Of course, open society is an ideology championed by radical billionaire George Soros, which involves open borders, no prisons, and rampant crime, among other progressive ideas. But the open, as you see, no prisons. No, you live in an open-air prison. That's why there's no prisons. That's how that one will work. So citizens' bank accounts to social credit score just in a couple years after denial. That was fast. And excellent, folks. Thank you, Bill and Ted. Not to be left behind out of the governance inculcation crutch, U.S. House funding bill passes after anti-censorship, anti-CBDC measures are removed. Assurances to stop the funding of censorship and centrally controlled currencies has failed. The $1.2 trillion spending bill was rushed through the House of Representatives in the U.S. as enabled allocation of funding to what would have been prohibited recipient policies. This includes earmarking money in support of censorship efforts a U.S. CBDC, central bank digital currency, and vaccine mandates, among other things. Isn't it interesting? They tie that all together. Don't underestimate the notice of this. The Department of State's controversial Global Engagement Center is one of those that benefits from the bill, as it is to get funds to supposedly target only foreign countries and non-state actors engaged in propaganda and misinformation. But the reason the GEC has gotten itself in the news has been allegations that its activities so far also targeted lawful speech of Americans. The bill will be, quote, surrendered a provision that would have prohibited the Treasury Department from establishing a U.S. CBDC or discounting a paper currency. So again, the Northern America is right together, lockstep, as they lock down and open up, open banking, the digital gulag that's upon us, the Siberian gulag that's right here now. They denied all this. It's happening now. As I said, it was coming. I said, don't blink. And here we are. It's a couple of years. And we read, as we read the perpetual vulnerabilities here, relative to digital living, digital reliance, that will affect all of this digital stuff, whether censorable or CBDC. Understand that they're overlooking this as the so-called your representatives, as they appropriate money for this. Ghost race speculative execution attack impacts all CPU OS vendors. Like Spectre, the new ghost race exploit could give attackers a way to access sensitive information from system memory and take other malicious actions. What the researchers from IBM and VU Amsterdam discovered was a way to bypass these mechanisms by targeting the speculative execution or out-of-order processing feature in modern processors. Speculative execution burst into the spotlight in 2017 when researchers discovered a way to exploit the technique to access sensitive information in system memory, such as passwords, encryption keys, and emails, and use that data for further attacks. The so-called Spectre and Meltdown vulnerabilities affected virtually every modern processor and prompted a review of microprocessor architecture that in many ways is still ongoing. So what's in your wallet, folks? With these ongoing hacks and likely perpetual cross-system, cross-platform vulnerabilities, it won't be long until there won't be anything in your social cyber panopticonocratic wallet. It's the future that they want. The question is, what do you want? And what are you going to do to keep it? Because the they are coming to take you away, aha, in this funny farm, folks. It's all because we're quiet. They're just getting away with it. Wouldn't this be a riot if your government revenue or from Greta's carbon footprint goon squad, but the government backdoor hack, as we read, the vehicle involved in the police chase Tuesday in Janesville was able to be turned off remotely using automaker's app, police explained. The vehicle of 54-year-old was driving was believed to be stolen in Janesville, Police Department reported. It was spotted around noon by street crimes unit officers. Thanks to GPS monitoring, police said that they could secretly watch the vehicle's movement while waiting for the right time to arrest the man driving. The suspect drove out of Janesville and was tracked by Rock County Sheriff Officer Special Investigator Greta's unit. They followed this vehicle covertly, eventually having shut off through the tap of the Chevrolet application. Invested Greta units are on the lookout, folks. What GPS tracking is with your wallet as well, through your phone? This is expanding beyond what people think. It's bad enough they can stop your car, and they always give a warm and fuzzy, this guy was a criminal. But this is not what this story is about. Greta's Goon Squad, the Invested Gretas are going to be out there in the future. We all start having to go through the digital gulag and token citizenship. I saw some image that I didn't have time to respond. They're already putting out that there's going to be buses that are AI driven and that you will not be able to get on that bus unless you have your social credit. You're not going to be able to get an ID unless you have that social credit. So that's what they're already doing. It's already planned. So we got the impositions, and then we got a hack fest, but just hacking in these digital systems that no one's paying attention to. and want to put your life on the line over it, and you're willingly allowing it, is the other problem. Again, like the doctor, you have the final say. And you can choose to the vaccine. When you get to the law, you can choose whether it's a vaccine or quarantine. Once you realize you're an infectious principal, the one that can move that infectious agent, most people would just say, yeah, I'm too sick anyway. I'm going to go lay down. I'm going to go cloister myself. And it's not a thing, right? But no, they make a big thing about it because that's what they're driving. And yet you have choices of treatment. Now we see ivermectin could be. I'm not saying it is. I'm saying could be. Although, lots of information coming through for years that ivermectin's very unique and very interesting and in a lot of areas of health. Very unique thing it does in the body, around things in the body. And so here we have the vulnerabilities. We have the government can hack. You think it's just the Chevrolet going on there with an app? No, it ends up being that phone that they use the app in that they can actually hack your life there as well, shut it down with the point of an app that the MasterCard owner has over its token citizen, right? And so then we have the part of the hack fest that goes on. They sell your hacked private information to the highest bidder on top of this. Now, I want you to really think about this. When your life is put into a phone, into a database, into a cloud, and everything is required to be there. I told you this a long time ago, but now we're just seeing the evidence already, which is great. I hope more people see this and lower the vaccination rates by just not participating and stop giving the information for these reasons. Take these down and say, no, this, I'm not going to give any information. It's just not protected. I don't care what you think your security is. I got it all the way from the software all the way back down to the hardware. It's just not safe. It's just not something I'm going to do my life in. But once they get in, they can sell all this information. AT&T, so listen up, folks. This is like a PSA for those that may have AT&T. AT&T says leaked data of 70 million people is not from its system. And I say, who cares? There's 70 million people now have their information, personal, if you call it, personal information, now in the hands of a hacker who's trying to sell it. The data is from an alleged 2021 AT&T data breach that a threat actor known as Shiny Hunters attempted to sell to on the Raid Forum's data theft forum for a starting price of $200,000 and the incremental offers of $30,000. The hacker stated that they would sell it immediately for $1 million if you don't think that these databases are valuable. The data includes names, addresses, mobile phone numbers, encrypted date of birth, encrypted social security numbers, and other internal information. However, the threat actors having decrypted the birth dates and social security numbers and added them to another file in the leak, making them also accessible. Therefore, if you were an AT&T customer before and through 2021, it is safe to assume that your data was exposed and can be used in targeted attacks, including SMS and email phishing and SIM swapping attacks. If you receive any SMS texts or phishing emails claiming to be from AT&T, be very careful about providing any information. Instead, contact AT&T directly to confirm that they attempted to contact you. And we've been dealing with these folks, AT&T, I'm not so sure, but you do it anyway. You need to have some protection. There are so many ways these companies, all of them seem to be, and we could see it in the rules, but we start applying what they're doing. They have so many ways of stealing your data, taking your data, requiring the data, not giving you service, lying about the service, getting more money, and then charging you where it doesn't belong, and then covering the whole thing up by multiple levels of so-called technical service and or customer service. Well, this is a big corrupt system here on top of it all. But we have to engage. We have to pay for this abuse inside the fact that it's not protected whatsoever. And so goes the cyber panopticonocracy future that they want for you in this hack fest. And that's the social credit tied to your bank. Looks like commercial crimes in the making. No warrant is required as we read this. Google is ordered to identify who watched certain YouTube videos. So, again, some of this you just look at, it doesn't matter. What I'm telling you, when they start insisting that you're gonna function within this digital or have nothing, you're probably likely going to go ahead and get into the digital system and have nothing otherwise, or then the tracking and tracing that you're going to be now consenting to. But here, Google, U.S. federal law enforcement and courts have gone a step further in the extreme efforts that they are making to surveil people's activities online, including Google's vast platforms. The latest is the tech giant gets orders to identify all people who happen to be watching certain videos in or live streams on YouTube. After directly censoring creators and channels giving geolocation data of its users to the authorities in response to controversial geofencing warrants, this is a new example of how Google can be used and abused in a dragnet-style investigations, in quotes. Forbes writes that it has had an access to several orders that name certain YouTube videos, citing one unsealed case originating in Kentucky and having to do with the people viewing content posted by a user who law enforcement suspects of money laundering for selling Bitcoin for cash. Undercover agents had contacted the user, sending links to drone mapping and AR tutorials, to next turn to Google asking to be told who watched the videos. The videos had more than 30,000 views, and a court ordered that any user who did between January 1st and 8th of 2003 must be thoroughly unmasked. The order wanted names, addresses, phone numbers, and account activity of each Google user and IP addresses of everyone who watched the videos without an account. Watch the videos without an account. It's fair to expect law enforcement won't have access to that sensitive personal information without probable cause, commented Electronic Privacy Information Center John Davidson. This order turns that assumption on its head. So, as I've been suggesting, and this is not a fail-safe, but it's a thought to have, maybe it's time to start using things like the Tor browsers, start understanding how to function with the OS called Unix, which is a couple of tunneled conditions, and maybe find alternatives to all these complicit platforms. Look for other platforms, which over time will likely find my listener spelunking the deep web, but developing peer-to-peer autonomous mutual federations. And in part, this is what I understand is being developed for RLM, so if you feel the urge to donate to this cause, please do. Find the web, find realliberty.com, find the donate button, and do what you can to move this along. It's being very, very quick and serious. We see the government's moving already. Things they denied just a couple years ago are already in place, as I was suggesting to you was the case. So, as informing others about these dangers will not be considered responsible speech or conduct, as goes North America with the United States and Kyrgyzstan, so goes the EU. This is a global function. So I'm pointing this thing out to you. See, my listenership may not be that large, but it's global. And so we're all facing a similar thing. Isn't that interesting? We all have different governments, and it's all facing the same thing. Just what I explained was going on for years in the United States and the subversion of your administrative system, and why it became very apparent that savings clauses were really, really important. Now, if I get to it, we're going to talk a little bit about that at the end for some of you. Hopefully, I'll get there all in this one. The cattle, the milk producers, and your farmers. There's been a big deal come up that I was responding to. But this is a global thing, and it's being subverted in your own countries because the laws are already there, and the administrations are really in the fulfillment of things like sustainable development. They don't have to join up with anything. They just implement the compliance, and people are allowing it. It's like they allow the phones, and they allow all to be duped, and they allow to be stolen from. They allow to be told by the companies that they don't have certain things and put into dispute resolution situations, which administratively in the United States is preferable to actually doing courts, and they've made some reason for it. But if you have property and rights, that's a breach to you directly, immediately. So we see here now, moving back over to the EU, not just North America, not where the freedom of speech, freedom of this and freedom of that. No, we're just moving to the EU. Just an administrative overview over the top of the countries of Europe. Remember that. How the EU plans to regulate online influencers toward responsible online speech and conduct. There's your behavior right there. EU's next target in the bloc's self-inflicted war on disinformation is online influencers. There you go, the self-inflicted. I've been saying this for years. Here's someone else picking it up. They're seeing it too. It's done on purpose. Create the problem that you want to solve. So you create the problem and you solve it the way you need, because at that point, no one knows what to do, and nobody understands just to go to the black and white, so that you can't, you might be able to go far, but you can't go that far. The initiative comes with the stated goal to, and I have to say, EU, I don't know what your laws are there. There's so many nonsensical things over there. The point is that this is the same control, looking at doing, controlling the very same things across the globe. The initiative comes with the stated goal to educate influencers using regulators about what their responsibility are in case, their responsibility are in case of harmful, in quotes, content that they share happens to be deemed as a potential adverse impact on their audience. So, precautionary measures here, pre-crime. Unlike a French law adopted in 2023, which clearly says the influencers are those who, quote, in exchange for a fee, use their reputation to communicate with their audience, the EU wants to broaden the definition to influencers having, quote, authenticity-based relationships with their followers. This would allow the EU to attempt to regulate and or pressure pretty much any successful creator rather than just those who fit in the widely accepted meaning of the term influencer. So you notice really quickly, influencers are those that make the money. It's about the money. Show me the money. It's about commerce. And now, someone like myself that knows not to be in there and tries to make a big distance, and harmfully so to me, certainly, is being targeted as well. So there's no one that's left behind that will be targeted. Again, you have to start looking at what the standards are and start positioning your platform or your use in ways that isn't identified the way their words that I've told you, you have to identify what they're claiming and not be there. All right, so it's all, again, notice to us on how this is working out. It's really not that hard in a way to figure out. You keep focused on what they're doing, but now they're imposing responsibility. Where is that coming from? I can already tell you it's the responsibility of a token citizen to the sustainable goals of the platform has to honor. So they're already telegraphing where the source is if you understand how to read between the lines. It's already future. It's already happening. They're just making it so. And apparently not a lot of people understand what to really do about it. And some of it is being able to address it directly, and some of it is going to be don't have the statuses that they claim. Don't be in platforms that can be considered large. That's why mutual federation is important, because there's likely not anybody that can, other than their own content, they're not going to be showing any big numbers to be able to have that done. And you'd be wise, I think, to privatize those numbers in this case. It's not important in one regard about, I guess it's an ego trip. And I guess I would like to know more and have more listeners and understand what I need to speak to get more listeners, because I think the information I give is useful. It's not, I mean, I'm talking about it. You can use it to protect yourself, and you can use it to anticipate these types of things. Like I said, I don't know many places you would go to hear that the habeas corpus was the thing you were supposed to use at Coby Swindle. I didn't hear anybody talking about that. I didn't make that up. Just in the law. You just go read it. So this is important stuff, because if everyone would have listened to the guy behind the woodshed for that, we would have had far less harm and damage done, and far more natives restless, and far more people saying, wait a minute, you can't just run roughshod over our lives. So this is why I think what I'm doing is important. Authenticity based. Well, I don't know how much more authentic you can get. I'm talking about the law and your requirement to know the law and to protect yourself. And that's pretty authentic, because they hold you to every bit of it, but the responsibility is not yours but to obey, where that responsibility is the shared prosperity to third-party obligations. That's your CBDC as well. It's really consistent. So we have what's going down as the status quo, and then we have someone who's fed up with all this status quo corruption, and a contender appears on the horizon for us to watch and to see and maybe watch the example. Literally anybody else announces U.S. presidential campaign. So here's how parts of things to do to start to bring some notoriety to these issues, to call them out, get people to see. Hopefully, as we saw the lower vaccination rates, people are starting to see that, well, they may not have to really do it. What little part I played in that, I don't know, but there it was. People may understand how to rethink what they were doing. Or they just say, well, wait a minute, that COVID-19 really wasn't that bad. I don't see the need. Well, this is what you start to do. You get the word out. One of the tactics is to run for political office with the sole purpose of focusing on one or two objects that you just want everyone to hear. And you get real detailed, right to the point, and let those informations get out because you now have that platform. But literally anybody else announces U.S. presidential campaign, Texas voters could get the chance to cast their ballots for a man named literally anybody else this November if his long shot scheme to protest the U.S. two-party system is successful. Math teacher and military veteran Dustin Ebay formally changed his name to literally anybody else earlier this month and is now scrambling to gather the 113,151 signatures required to appear on the Texas ballots as an independent candidate. So here's a guy stepping up, being an example, changes his name, he's called literally anybody else, and it sounds like on this case he needs some help there down there in Texas. Mr. Else faces an uphill struggle to even enter the race. First, he has until only May 13th to collect those 113,000 some odd signatures from registered voters who did not vote in either the Republican or Democratic parties in Texas. Another refinement. And I never went around to collect these voter signatures, but I had been close enough. Well, in petitions I had been, where you collect the signatures for petitions, referendums and things like that. You really have to be dedicated to make sure that those people are accurate, because in something like this, they just want to kick them out. So you want to make sure you follow the rules. There's rules about it in the state. But this gentleman, Mr. Else, needs some help. I'm not delusional, Else told the outlet. This will be very hard to do, but it's not impossible. My hope is to have Donald Trump, Joe Biden, and literally anybody else right underneath, he continued, explaining that I really want there to be an outlet for folks like me who are just so fed up with this constant power grab between two parties that has no benefit for the common person. This isn't about me, more so as it is an idea, Else told WFAA. Quote, we can do better out of 300 million people for president. Just as I've said behind the woodshed, 300 million people can do much better, folks. Maybe consider en masse vote to send a message. Maybe a little bit of lawful election tampering. And this is not unusual. We can read voters often write in undeclared candidates as a means of prank or protest, with Mickey Mouse, Jesus Christ, and Batman all picking up a handful of votes in 2020, when you all were bored, I suppose. But no, this is a valid thing. So if you are already registered to vote, but don't vote because you think it's throwing away a vote, throw your vote to literally anybody else, just to see the look on their face. Mr. Else will likely appreciate the non-delusional confirmation, because, as he said, it's not about him, but literally anybody else. And I have to just, very cool idea. He wants to send a message. That's one of the ways you do it. That's, you throw yourself into as a candidate, and you show up, and you pitch your message because you have the platform now. You get a platform that you can't get anywhere else when you get those platforms, unless you're cut out, but that's another point, right? So, the two-party system, uniparty, he's fed up. He's a man fed up. Good. Good. Lots of ways at this thing to cause people to be aware there's a problem. We really need to roll up our sleeves and do something about it. And I've always been an advocate against, you never wants to go to the Second Amendment. I don't think, we were told and shown back in Lincoln time how that was going to work for us. And I don't think we've gotten any more intelligent on how that would work. So, maybe better than virtually anybody else, or literally, excuse me, Mr. Else, literally anybody else, better maybe than the very popular genocidal maniac as we read in the politics of today. What interesting things people will support and disregard other things here. Trump tells Israel it made big mistake. Images here of the bombed buildings have turned the world against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's war, Satan Yehu. The ex-president has declared former U.S. presidential Donald Trump has warned that Israel is losing a lot of support and must finish up its war in Gaza before its reputation declines any further. The comments represented a rare moment of criticism of the Jewish state by Trump. Quote, it's a very bad picture for the world. The world is seeing this every night. I would watch buildings pour down on people, Trump continued. Go and do what you have to do, but you don't do that, he told the Israeli papers. And I think that that's one of the reasons that there has been a lot of kickback. If people didn't see that every single night, I'd watch in every single one of those, and I think Israel wanted to show that it's tough, but sometimes you shouldn't be doing that. Sometimes not doing what? Show that you are committing genocide, ethnic cleansing, war crimes? Those heinous crimes you are supposed to do in secret, he's saying here? You mean don't do that? See, genocide started long before October 7th, even before the 1940s, folks, as Trump wants to, don't do that, continue it, but don't let us see it. These are all despicable deceivers here, all of them. And aside that, it's not being tough to act the lawless coward, opportunist, which Trump also supports. We're not condemning these atrocities, which genocide that he's claiming means peace. They want to say they kill everybody, that's going to bring them peace. It's just agreeing to genocide. And I wonder here what literally anybody else would say about that. Another despicable thing initiated by Trump, then continued by the Uniparty cohort Biden. So remember how this is working. Literally anybody else is running for president to challenge the Uniparty that both Biden and Trump are involved in. UK court ruling grants Assange reprieve and strong chance to appeal extradition. Trump caused this. All right? And I just barely keep track of it. It just comes along. I just hit the highlights. This is a serious problem in the world. Julian Assange will not be extradited immediately to the U.S., a London High Court has ruled. So they spent years and years and years to kick the can down a little bit further. It's not justice, I can tell you. Delay is injustice. Now we're watching that come out of the UK court. Yes, they're bought. This is what they're doing, but he's not going to come across the pond quite yet. The UK court ruling in Assange's extradition case stipulates that the United States must provide, quote, satisfactory assurances that Assange would get a fair trial and that he would not face the death penalty. Now what, folks, think about this. What valid binding assurances at all can the U.S. give regarding Assange's treatment? When the U.S. takes the position, the passing the binding of the U.N. resolution agreeing to a permanent ceasefire in Gaza to stop the genocide is non-binding. How are we supposed to take these assurances? And isn't it quite the insult? Assurances have to be made. I don't see these stories talking about any of that. I'm sure people are talking about it, but I don't see it in these articles. The U.S. will have to accept that it cannot impose the death penalty. I think that is probably easy for it to do. But it will have to counter arguments that he is, in effect, being sought for political purposes, which is a defense to a country in which to extradite you, he said, this representative. Commenting on this development, senior British human rights barrister Jeffrey Robertson, who has acted for Julian Assange in the past, told Sputnik that it is, quote, very pleasing for those who support freedom of speech because the High Court has acknowledged that there are a number of grounds of appeal which are strongly arguable. And I'm just going to start off the bat, I hope so. I don't know why it's still an argument. Again, delay is injustice. This should have been over a long time ago, and he's supposed to be presumed innocent. He's not been treated. He's been in inhumane conditions. And the UK court is supposed to produce that they are higher, better, because they've shown that the United States has an inhumane prison system. But this isn't just a freedom of speech matter. It's a freedom of presumption of innocence matter as well. Again, you notice the attorneys, reduce it down to one little thing, and it's a lot bigger issue. And with all that I noticed, and I was mentioning periodically when I bring these stories along, the pre-plea remedies due process requires to assert that the UK courts still recognize both and a couple of other things relative to all these, such as whistleblower deterrence, where we the people maintain the necessity to know the types of maladministration of government by the exposed malefactors through those blowing the whistle on otherwise covert crimes. Trump, don't show us your crimes. And independent press is to uncover those truths that are in the public's best interest. That's what we're not hearing about at all of this. They mention it, but it's not part of the defense relative to his status as a journalist, and that the presumption is strong that he should be free to move about the country and then take into also, but he ran. Well, yeah, because he's being persecuted. Nobody's addressing all this. No, the UK and the United States courts are lockstep. And all this is supposed to be enshrined in the freedom of the press, this ability to do what he did. the court was apparently cognizant of the riling of the natives here, apparently deciding accordingly, as I said, start making noise. And they let the courts look out. They can't disregard. They've got to make it the appearance of justice. And there's been so much injustice, I'm just shocked that there hasn't been more people in the UK, more celebrities, I've explained before, that have been writing and challenging the officials, the judges, for actually performing under the law, with using all the history of the precedent that was going on. According to the observers, the UK court took into account the overwhelming public support for the outrage that leaves little doubt that this would spill out onto the streets, hence the decision granting his legal team an opportunity to continue to fight. Don't rile the natives. You sure you're being riled up? And the courts take cognizant even though they're not supposed to. And you see the corruption right there. It's everywhere. It's all is implying a political, not judicial considerations by so-called judges when they're looking out to watch how you're riling the natives. As it was observed by another article by the political commentator and former teaching fellow of the College of Birmingham, David William Norris, quote, there is no legal reason, only a political one, for keeping Assange in Belmarsh prison where the conditions are known to be inhumane, and he should be released forthwith after more than a decade of brutal political persecution, being his health collapses completely and the freedom of the press perishes with him. Very important statement here. The courts of UK, watching his health collapse, are still not protecting him. This is a political condition, not a judicial one. That's a serious breach and an indictment against the system. And here the J6 are political prisoners, here are no different than Assange, and persecuted by the same treasonous vigor, by the same style uniparty corruption, fighting over which method of left or right usurpation input controls the rudder of the ship of state here, as it takes credit for reaching the point of no return. And I suspect somewhere near and stabbing at the American heartland, Kansas, Toto. But don't close your eyes if and that tune comes to your mind. Moving on here on these reports showing us what's out there, what's the news, what the corruption is. It's right in our face. They're not bashful about it anymore. Someone had to have their eyes wide shut on this for this to be normal on Biden's uniparty watch. Let's see, testing, probing, surveilling, vulnerabilities, defense responses, and when added, other critical infrastructure disruptions that we've heard of very recently, illegal immigration and porting of enemy agents into the country, is softening up this target as we read this week. The U.S. Supply Chain Task Force assesses disruptions after key bridge collapse. The Biden administration Supply Chain Disruption Task Force has held a meeting to discuss the potential national problems caused by the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore and the ensuing chaos in the city, which is one of the largest ports in the U.S., the White House announced in the readout on Thursday. With this unfolding star-spangled banner desecration and bridge debacle, don't you think assessing the capacity and how to do and then immediately remove the fallen segments out the way would be more important than assessing what is already known to be 100% incapacity, which is actually only half a problem, isn't it? You only want to get to the port side, you need to go from the south, right? So this is not different than getting the south to rejoin the Union in the north, isn't it? At the meeting, members of the task force shared real-time analysis of sectors with significant activity through the Port of Baltimore, including automobiles, farm machinery, and agricultural products. The task force will coordinate federal outreach and efforts to assist the impacted industries and will continue to monitor shipping activity at alternative ports, the White House says. Look at their focus on agricultural products and farm machinery. Understand production here. And so I look at this problem that happened, this bridge falling in this interesting condition. We have no way here to immediately remove the bridge segments blocking the passage to restore significant activity through the Port of Baltimore? Really? Is this how fast this country would be taken out in a declared war? Really? Are we understanding what we're watching here? However this thing is put all together or whatever, even by accident. Are we that helpless as a nation that all we can do is assemble feckless and impotent task forces? Remember, I've explained about these task forces. They are tools for transforming your country to the future that they want. We've talked about this for years. These terms tell you, they're a roadmap to what's going on. It could imply a much different tale than what's been told and surmised yet so far. A task force assessing disruptions seems to me to be a sign that those disruptions are planned to continue for a while. But if we look around, I hear China would have had the debris cleared by last night, and Russia, 3 months away from finishing the bridge from Crimea already, with a rail line added and finished within next year there. How pathetic we are all of a sudden as a nation. Now, I won't delve into the promoted plausible accident scenario explained here by the harbor pilot, which you can find. It took a while to find it. He finally made a report and it was printed, and all of the anomalous stuff surrounding this incident outside that narrative, which I have no experience in. But Biden coming out immediately to say the feds would cover the cost seems enough an anomaly to suggest this is the Fed's baby, and it implies at least he already knows it's an act of war, foreign, domestic, or both, or something along the lines that insurance will cover. And another, I don't have the link, but you can find it, the insurance company is saying none of that's going to affect them, so they got confirming that there's not going to be any attachment to insurance. So it would seem the Biden regime is working with whomever caused this to hurt America, because this immediate response has not been explained and runs counter to normal experiences as we're reading and getting more information from this. And this list is growing. The federal government itself, although the 9/11 analogy, reported posted threats for the lack of financial support, and as an extortion, the captain of the ship, of which was Ukrainian, the evidence which is being deftly pulled from the internet, the Ukrainian threat for not giving them the money. Or is this also maybe from the 9/11 example from Israel for similar lack of U.S. support at the U.N. in abstaining from the U.N. agreement against it, which they just, the United States, oh, it's non-binding anyway. Well, it's not. It's actually binding. Why didn't they do this on other votes that they did vote on but voted against? It's a very important conundrum, if you will. But I think that's telling us what it's all about. So whoever this, the reasoning, what is behind all this? The government, U.S. government, seems even more willing to hurt America or allow America to be hurt, being its duty there is not actually contingent on this. Otherwise, clearing debris and rebuilding would have already begun because the plans were already made. They tell us they have contingencies for this. They would have already had that running as soon as the bridge went in. We don't see that. This is way more serious. We want to go off and talk about lots of stuff, but I'm going to watch. This is a very serious thing. We don't know where this is coming from. You listen to the harbor pilot, he makes some sense. Well, we dropped the port anchor. Well, the boat never goes left. And if they would have just not done anything, the momentum would have shoved it right through, right on past the pylon. So I don't know about all this other stuff. But when we didn't see the bridge starting, 3 days, get China to come and do it. They'll have it cleaned out in days. They'll be done. Russia will have the whole highway done. 11 miles of the Crimea Bridge done in 2 years, folks. What's a few miles? So there's a big anomaly going on in this country. They're doing it to us again. And there's been a statement, somebody doing some reporting, talking to a lot of people, that says that we can look at a lot of the other things we've reported on, the agricultural attacks, the refineries being blowing up all this last year. In isolation, their claim was it's not significant. I've always thought it's significant, but their claim is not significant. But the people watching now are starting to believe maybe it's not isolated, and we're being set up as a country, and Biden is allowing it. The internal administration is allowing it. But here, as we watch this thing drag on, what may cause this thing to drag out even longer, seemingly like time standing still, we read, melting polar ice causes distortions in time. Fascinating, I think, maybe. Global warming is throwing the Earth off balance, and making the days longer, a California physicist has warned. The latest threat to UTC comes from melting ice caps in Greenland in the Antarctic, and geophysicist Duncan Agnew explained in Nature on Wednesday, using satellite-based gravitational measurements, Agnew and his team at the University of California discovered that melting ice settles as water around the Earth's midsection with this change of mass, slowing the planet's rotational speed. Humanity depends on a network of 450 atomic clocks to keep coordinated universal time, network computing, global positioning, and the future they want, and financial markets all require this precise measurement of time to function. However, the Earth's rotation doesn't always sync up with this official standard. Gravitational drag from the sun and moon changes to rotational speed of the planet's core, and earthquakes can all speed up or slow down the passage of time. Some fascinating statements in the physical, but did you understand? Somebody talking about global warming is recognizing the sun too? How'd he do that? They don't believe in the sun. Here he says, different web services currently handle leap seconds differently, Agnew wrote. Many systems now have software that can accept an additional second, but few, if any, allow for removing a second so that the negative leap second is expected to create many difficulties. So after reading that little bit, there's more to see. Can we agree humanity and humanism and technocratic constraints are unnatural? That humankind can live without, as it has, long before humans were first invented as a term by the church around the 1400s, if you do the research, as I've talked to you about, that ice buildup naturally comes and goes, and if humanism is too stupid to make its machines compliant with reality, they are excess baggage that these folks, they need to be jettisoned from the surface of the Earth, of which I theorize would compensate for the dead weight they bring to drag things down, reminiscent of the costly regurgitation of the non-event created by the professed Y2K bug, which, if you'll remember, was a problem in the coding of computerized systems that was projected to create havoc in computers and computer networks, same words as here, when dealing with the dates beyond December 31st, 1999. And party on we did. But here, Gaia to green religion. Gaia's speaking to these folks now. Official standards? I don't need no stinking standards. And we read, aside from its impact in timekeeping, melting of the ice caps is expected to cause a range of problems and opportunities around the world. According to the worst-case estimates by the World Bank, a rise in sea levels from 10 to 100 centimeters by the year 2100 could submerge the entire Maldives archipelago. Okay. Well, I guess South China Sea has rock outcroppings that are submerged every day. It's today, 2100. Also that 1.5 degree increase around Gaia. But sea rise? Gaia responds to this. Around 18,000 years ago, rise in sea levels by 10 to 100 centimeters. Hold my beer! Let me cover part of the North Australian island with 300 feet. Those people there make me itch. I don't need no stinking anthropomorphic help from mere humans to melt ice. Slowing time, folks, a human construct. The nerve of Mother Nature not to comply. How dare you? Right, Greta? Yeah? You going to support me on this one? Maybe it's a good time the bridge was taken out now. They'll might be able to build one tall enough to escape the sea rising. Maybe it was a good thing that went down. We won't know until the future, will we? We got us here, the time is spinning. Yeah, there's some interesting physics around that, but the way they're using it. Remember, too, by 2100, the world ocean should have boiled away. So that world is going to be spinning so fast, I think we'll be flying off. Think about that. We have a break here after the hour. And we'll just give the notice if you come in a little bit late, didn't know where we started. This is episode BTW RLM 570. And you can't go wrong when you get behind the woodshed. As we read, the climate crisis could cause catastrophic harm to human health. 200-plus medical journals warn. Lancet wasn't bad enough. More than 200 medical journals are calling on the World Health Organization to deem two overlapping environmental crises, climate change and biodiversity loss, as a global health emergency while warning of the potential for catastrophic harm to human health. Remember, biodiversity is animals. Humans are a form of animal, not even an animal, it's a monster. So this is how they combine this up. This is all Agenda 21 kind of stuff. If you just go read the goals, the sustainability goals, all those words right in there are all part of it. They're all combined. Global health, folks. In the coordinated editorial published on Wednesday, a team of authors outlined the dire impacts linked to rising temperatures, extreme weather events, and the loss of wildlife. 99% of the species of which I understand has died. And it still goes on. The climate crisis and loss of biodiversity both damage human health, and they are interlinked, said lead author Cameron Ambrosi, editor-in-chief of the British Medical Journal, in a statement. And they were so helpful to us at Kobe Swindle, aren't they? Not. That's why we must consider them together and declare a global health emergency. It makes no sense. Now listen, this guy's may saying it makes no sense. This is senselessness, but he's saying it makes no sense for climate and nature scientists and politicians now to consider the health and nature crisis in separate silos. But we must, folks. Global health is not yours. Remember, global health, not yours. But we must. Silos? How high is that bridge they're trying to sell you as well? As we keep seeing this nonsense come after it, like Disease X, over and over. These lunatics. The changing climate and human health. Remember, all that's in the states, in the United States. All that's reserved to the states. These folks have no authority. We heard it in one of the first stories. Take notes about this. Hold it dear to hold protection against these idiots that mean you nothing but harm. The changing climate of endless disease X. Oh, the offending nightmare returns here. But remember all this. It can't return. If nothing ever happened, if it never occurred, it's not returning. Here, the nightmare returns, this article, a deadly new bat-borne virus is spreading through Asia. So now they throw in a little bit of story and they try to give a bit of legitimacy to something that might be natural, but where? The southern India state of Kerala recently introduced emergency measures to combat an infectious respiratory disease transmitted by bats, although we're not talking about COVID-19, but rather the Nipah virus. The Nipah virus infection, also called the Nipah virus encephalitis, remember Zika? Yeah, now they pull this together. Don't miss the fact that there may be things out there that are not the disease X at all, and can't be. Why? Because this is a natural caused encephalitis. The great COVID swindle was based in novel or synthetic lab-made lipidized proteins. The Nipah virus infection, also called the Nipah virus encephalitis, is named after the Malaysian village of Kampung Sungai Napai, Nipah, where it was first found. It is a zoonotic disease that spreads from animals to humans. An outbreak of the virus in Malaysia in 1998 and 1999 started from infected pigs, resulted in 265 cases, 108 human deaths. So it sounds like it actually went from the pig to the people, right? Pigs fly flu. Where do you think they might have learned that? The virus multiplies because of factors like scarcity of food, drinking water, when bats get scared, climate change, and due to pregnancy in female bats. The connection to climate change is an assumption that has yet to be studied. So they throw it in there, kind of keep it going. But here's a thing. That is just a nightmare, folks. And it's continuing. As they continue to prod you and keep this scare function going in people that will believe it. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't exist over there, but it's over there. Did it exist anywhere else? No. So there's not going to be a nightmare that's reoccurring. It's over there. And it actually, maybe we had to look at the pigs. I don't know. But this is the point. They take nature and they condemn it. It says it's a problem to humans and they don't want around anyway. And we can see they after our food, and hopefully we get to that direction. They're after our food production, and you've seen how I've explained it's not in commerce, and that's the first thing they do. Anyway, we go after the green religion, supposed to embrace biodiversity, but they'll go around. They want to kill trees to sequester carbon dioxide. Another fraud. Again, carbon dioxide is needed for life. In fact, so much some plants use it in the function of their life, doing some very interesting chemical things as well, inside. But the real nightmare is the green religion cactus killers and the environment they feed and support, that they are after your pineapples, too. Amazing what man's learning about these things. Very, very cool. Crushed Silesian acid metabolism, also known as CAM photosynthesis, is a carbon fixation pathway that evolved in some plants as an adaptation to arid conditions that allows a plant to photosynthesize during the day, but only exchange gases at night. In a plant using full CAM, the stomata in the leaves remain shut during the day to reduce evapotranspiration, but they open at night to collect carbon dioxide and allow it to diffuse into the mesophyll cells. The CO2 is stored as 4-carbon malic acid or vacuoles at night, and then in the daytime, the malate is transported to chloroplasts, where it is converted back to CO2, which is then used during photosynthesis. The pre-collected CO2 is concentrated around the enzyme RUBISCO, increasing photosynthetic efficiency. Let me add just quickly, if you haven't figured out, without CO2, without carbon dioxide, these plants die. It's part of how they function. So Greta, there's a reality. You can't get rid of all the carbon. You're going to be killing plants, as well as other things. That's just not new. I'm just saying right there you can hear how integral into life the CO2 is in this. Understand that there's succulents that do this that are edible. And if you pick them, I think, in the morning, they're tart. And if you pick them at night, they've done through this process, they're sweeter. Plants employing CAM are most common in arid environments where water is scarce. Being able to keep stomata closed during the hottest and driest part of the day reduces the loss of water through evapotranspiration, allowing such plants to grow in environments that would otherwise be too dry. And the example they show when you go to this page is pineapples, folks. No CO2, you won't have pineapples. If you do some research on pineapples, they're pretty cool, pretty interesting with this process that goes on. I just always find it fascinating how cool some of this stuff is. And there's people out there that want to kill it, want to die, want it to die, and that because they want actually are targeting you, and they don't think that they're you, a man or a woman. They don't think that they are the same thing as you, which is really quite the stretch of mental incapacity here. Again, flabbergasted, but people listen to it like they listen to the great Covey swindle. I'm suggesting you look very carefully on what happened, and we'll start to understand the work before us is not small and why it may look like we're going to really have to step back, protect ourselves, learn to protect ourselves, be that example. Because they are out there, they want to attack us, they want to attack our food. And it looks like I'm going to have just probably enough time to talk about these next important things that came to me. A number of you sent me some information, told me about it, and so I want to touch it relative to, it's in Oregon, but the principles are pretty much the same. The rules I may mention should be the same. Again, if you looked at COVID, the great COVID swindle, the rules for a communicable disease is ultimately the same. They got there in different steps, but ultimately the same duties and obligations, the same conditions, the same national organic establishment power in the states, all that was the same. So listen, for those of you that not in Oregon, which is a breaking news thing, I understand, here almost a week, although it looks like the agencies have been on doing this for a month or two in a couple regards. It was brought to me as one story, but in studying this from a couple of listeners that informed me on this, it looks like it turns out to be two important matters regarding growing food that is being interfered with by state agencies. And I'll start with the one that now we have, just 4 days ago, I think it was, that was temporarily suspended. So this is a fluid type of situation, but it's instructive. And so what bit I understand about it, and excuse me if I get errors, please double check my work. And if I'm wrong, just fix what I had wrong and then move to the lawful position if I am in error, but I don't know that I am. And I'm going to be pulling from fading memory relative to dealing with water law in this state and dealing with the legislature in making laws. Again, this is way back right before our lawsuit when we found out what they were doing. And these agencies, again, on the front end of taking people down in production. Oregon's Agriculture Department reverses burdensome requirement on small dairy farms. And so burdensome is one of those agency things they're not supposed to do. it says that you essentially agrees that they have the right to make a regulation against you, but it can't be so bad that it takes, you know, it makes, you're working with the regulation longer than you're doing the production. I don't agree with that, in that if it's burdensome, you've got other problems on top of it that is taking you about, especially if there's no authority to have any burden. So that's the thing I'm usually looking at, as you'll understand when we keep challenging jurisdiction. Do you even have a power and authority to interfere with what you're doing? And this state's very interesting that I'm going to talk about here, so take note, because as I talk to people around the country over the last 2 years now, things I've said I've found is there in those, every state, you just have to find them. All these savings things are there. All the way, the purpose for the laws and how they're wrongly applied is in the law, is in your statutes. You can find it if you, and I, again, I can give the path, and people are coming back and telling me they're finding it. It's really pretty interesting, and that just makes me wonder where we are as a people. Here last year, the department reinterpreted its definition of confined animal feeding operation, or CAFO, C-A-F-O, to include small dairy farms, and the CAFO permit is an enforceable plan farms must follow to protect surface and groundwaters from pollution, such as manure produced by cows. The change came after dairy industry lobbyists complained some small dairy farms had an unfair competitive advantage over bigger dairy farms that had to follow state regulations and pay annual fees. The rule would have required small dairy farms to install expensive drainage systems, put in waste holding tanks, keep daily records, and pay annual fees starting at $125 on top of a $100 application fee. That's where you stick it to yourself if you don't know better, or face fines of up to $10,000 if they don't comply. Quote, we don't have a lobby. We don't have an industry group that necessarily supports people that milk a few cows, Anderson said. This is the litigant that's speaking here on this lawsuit. Like, it's already hard enough. Most of these people don't have hired labor. They're doing all this on their own, just as land disposal law would predict. The Oregon Department of Agriculture, this is the Oregon Department of Agriculture. It's important. There's an Oregon Department of Water Department. So you got to keep these two things. They're talking about water too, the wastewater. That should have been EPA, state EPA. But, so this is a multi-pronged attack that may or may not be coming in the right ways. But you see it all, you'll find that it is an attack. It's all coming at the same time to attack the same types of people under attorney lobbyists that are moving stuff forward for the corporations. The Oregon Department of Agriculture declined OPB's request for an interview. In a statement, the agency said it's withdrawing its decision effective immediately. Quote, in particular, ODA withdraws its policy that the act of milking an animal in a barn or the washing of equipment used in milking an animal triggers a CAFO permit coverage requirement. The statement read, quote, many small farm operators involved in livestock production could have been required to obtain a CAFO permit under the withdrawn policy, but it is no longer necessary in most cases. The state's agency decision follows a lawsuit filed by Anderson, King, and two other dairy farmers. The case seeks to stop the agency from enforcing the regulation, which would have kicked in April 1st, April Fool's Day. Since the withdrawal is only temporary, though, and the department is not conceding that it lacks the power to enforce the new requirements, the lawsuit filed by the Nonprofit Institute for Justice will continue in federal court, according to Bobby Taylor, one of the attorneys representing the four dairy farmers. There's a lot packed in that little statement right there, and it's a little bit off, not wrong. I'm saying that if they're going to federal court, that federal court is supposed to protect their patent rights. The state should have done it as well. That's where we're going to go. When you understand what I've been saying, you'll understand how this starts to get out. But interesting statement right here, they lack the power. I doubt that anybody actually challenged that maybe more properly than I think they have the ability to do. Quote, they've stopped short of saying that they would never enforce this policy against small farmers like Sarah's or disclaiming that they had the authority to do so in the first place, which is what we're challenging in the lawsuit, Taylor said. So there's still a fight to be had, and we're going to continue to have that fight. And I'm going to offer, didn't I address that with the COVID swindle when I said you go to the public health official and you present them with their duties and obligations and produce the evidence that they did? Ish, the challenge that is the way you show they don't have the power. Or if they act, they maybe have a power, but they may have exceeded that. a very important word in there. Do they have the power? Should have been done in a response to the agency in protection of those property rights. So that's probably the direction. Instead of going to federal court first, I would have tried to get their commitment as in a letter response to have them demonstrate that power. But it's not just asking that. There's a whole lot of things that you can do relative to the administrative rules to confine it and to make sure that you get what you want. And when they don't, then you got them for wanton disregard and all this other stuff. Why? Because, as I've suggested, land soil disposal is an obligation of the state to protect. We talked about all of this, all right? So this is not even new. What I'm trying to do is apply this knowledge I've been telling you to something that's coming up. And some people are trying to fight. It sounds like they're backing some of the agencies off. The problem is they should have never had to go fight in the first place. I'm not saying that you won't when you do what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that becomes another harm. When someone has to go do the paperwork for something that doesn't apply to them, that's a takings. In this state, there's supposed to be money, unless it's the state, but there's supposed to be money set aside for takings. If there is none, then there's also a challenge that the agency could not put the rule because the legislature didn't appropriate the money for such a type of takings. And that's determined by what? The evidence of your property rights, which is where? In the land patent. So another aspect, what might be here playing on this in the government's war against producers of raw milk on these, and from a prior report on this matter, have links, you can see at the blogcaster. We read, the lawsuit comes amid a debate around unpasteurized milk in Oregon. Such milk can't be sold in stores, but farmers can sell it directly to consumers. Advocates tout the healthy bacteria that they say is killed in the pasteurization process. However, the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention advises that the public not consume raw milk, citing a heightened risk of serious foodborne illness and a lack of evidence for health benefits. The agency says good farming practices and regular testing of animals don't eliminate a risk of infection. I've known a friend of mine who was a dairyman. The things they go through to try and make sure that they don't have this risk is quite amazing, the work that they do. A lot of work these folks do. But there is that risk. Okay, just like there's a risk to vaccines. You didn't see them stop that. That's the decision that's supposed to be left in each of us. But I want to talk about this production. And we take these two cases, one in the Department of Agriculture, one in the Oregon Water Department, and taken together, the Oregon Water here makes a rule that if you bring in your cows into the clean environment to milk them, to reduce the possibility of contaminating the milk, to reduce the risk as someone who produces raw milk, you're penalized if you don't get an unrelated, inapplicable pollution permit. And so I'm going to offer that I didn't have time to parse this all through, just what I could see, but it looks like a lot of different players are playing where they shouldn't be. And they're imposing things that they ought not to. They don't even have authority to do. They may have power in some place. They don't have power in others. So this sounds where they are now attacking the raw milk producer, saying that it's a risk, infection, dirt, you got to keep them clean, and then attack you for cleaning. It sounds about par for the course for government interference, pushing the future that they want to complain about a risk of infection, then obstruct the reasonable mitigation to that risk. Well, all the while that they tell you that you should get injected with a untested non-vaccine bioweapon. So what do people do and how do people fare or get here drinking raw milk without all this regulation in the prior history, our history? How'd they do that? How'd they drink raw milk and how we have a population at all? But that's a question is a problem. Because what people did before is how they acquired the land disposed by Congress for the necessary purpose and of which is protected by the various savings clauses in state laws. Look around, folks. You'll see this. Mention one in administrative rules, which is effective here. It's interesting. I just started mentioning it here as a story about administrative law and what they're doing. And these are rules that are being proposed. You need to step in to help protect yourself, at least set the record. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. But these are various savings clauses are protecting your property. The state law already says that. Which the state now is in willful and wanton trespass without lawful warrant under color of state authority and by omission to comply with and in invasion of its obligations and duties to protect these agricultural land disposals. And understand, I'm talking about land disposals. I do not believe that people are doing themselves any favors to say that they are a business and doing business. What you're doing is enjoying what the land was disposed to do in a lot of these places. Even the miners, the mineral entries, all have agricultural use enjoyments. They're already granted to people. The agencies cannot take and regulate and cause a granted right to be regulable. It means that they don't have jurisdiction. They shouldn't even be talking to you. And there's reason for all of this stuff, but I don't hear anybody ever talking about it. Well, except behind a woodshed. So remember, permits, these permits that you have to apply for are in commerce. And there are permissions to do illegal things, essentially. There's also these police power things, but that's not what they're talking about here. Land disposed to agricultural entry is not in commerce. I've talked a lot about this. This is how they take us out. That we don't understand the people. We don't understand this grant law, this disposal law. But this is not commerce. Agriculture entries of land are not commerce. They are production. And it was the reason for the land to be granted to them and disposed to them. Not maybe them, but as an assign. What am I talking again? The evidence of which is in the land patent. It's all these are registered. You don't make them up. You go find the one that's on record. That was the ultimate evidence of the disposal and how it was disposed and what rights are within it. The agricultural grants have included the appurtenant rights to water, husband the animals as you declare and need, and to use your land, fully use your land to do so. So remember, I've told you before, the future that they want, their agents try to move everything into commerce. From food to fork is an adulteration of the law. It's a breach of the law. You have production, you have the right to go to market, if you will. Now, market word's a bad one, but you have a right to dispose of your produce, the thing that you were granted to do, without it being regulated or in commerce. It's part of enjoying the land under the land grant from Congress. And the state is obligated to protect that. Why and how? It's Admission Act. And maybe I've got another tab here to go talk to you about. I'll get to that. So I'm trying to pull this together. A lot of moving pieces, but when you understand how it's oriented, it's real simple. Well, you see, I'm kind of talking kind of quick, and I haven't talked about this stuff for years and years and years. And somehow I'm kicking back into a lot of this, even though my memory is a little bit fuzzy on the very particulars of it. In fact, again, we were engaged with for water, not the agriculture, but the water, relative to disposed rights, and the Oregon Department of Water had nothing to say because we were relating to saving clauses that they cannot breach. Now, then we went backwards in time and got to the law and explanations in the law of what was and was not to be touched. And not much can be touched underneath the grants. But here, the agency on these, their trespasses are felonies under state law, being extortion and coercion, respectively, the property and then the rights appurtenant. So you got extortion is the property and the coercion is the rights appurtenant that property. And I've talked about these laws here before. They're in every state law, slightly worded a little bit different, but you got to parse through them. We talked about someone coming underneath a color of authority without actual lawful warrant to interfere with your property in some way. That is a felony. Okay? If they come after the appurtenant right to that property, because you have to have a property before you have a right, you have to identify the property. If they come after a right appurtenant to that property, as it's established, that's felony coercion. This is really straightforward. Now, along the same lines as this attack that they're doing relative to the Department of Agriculture, the attack from the Oregon Water Department, if you don't think these attacks are coordinated, just all of a sudden it came down. I didn't know anything about them. So thank you again for those that put me on this. And I'm only doing a rough treatment again. So just to give you the reminder in one context, I'm disappointed in the people. I'm glad to hear they're fighting, but I'm disappointed that there's no real knowledge. And this one story tries to explain that. Someone actually says that they aren't using the water that the Oregon Department, Water Department says that they have to. They're within an exemption and don't know it. And the agency's not telling them that. No, they send out the cease and desist. Completely a violation of law. So here we move on now from the CAFO and the commingling of all these ideas relative to the cattle and the milk and then the care, the water, and the runoff, which is pollution. I don't know how they got all that at the Oregon Department of Agriculture, but there they is. They're supposed to be promoting all this stuff, not diminishing it. I'll get to that too. But we go to the water now. I saw some links of information saying that they've issued cease and desist orders, and people were talking about it. And like I said, it seems mashed together what people are talking about. However, let's just keep moving, try to parse this out a little bit. Get some, if you're involved in any of this stuff, start learning for yourself what I'm saying. And as you get into this, you'll learn more and more, and you'll start to see, as I'm noticing more and more people do, especially when they got a land patent in front of them, all of a sudden the principles they'd been reading about, which didn't have a place to attach, reading the document of the patent, started to make themselves apparent, and the limits of governmental power, more how that you are going to get that to be recognized or shown that the government has absolutely gone off the deep end relative to a lot of this, which I think more people need to know. But you're not going to do it on your opinion. You're going to do it by, as I've been telling you, step by step. As Oregon enforces its water use requirements, small farmers face the consequences. That title is just angers me. Producers are not to suffer consequences. Let's talk about settlement. These land disposals are peace and settlement. The sheriff is to enforce the peace. That's what they're talking about. Your ability to stay settled on your land, quiet, peaceful, to affect the use of the land. The lack of use of the land is a waste. And so you'll start to see this once you learn these principles, start to apply it to this. Christina Del Campo surveys her field, pointing to a garlic she hopes will grow on its own and the blueberries she's no longer able to sell. Well, almost heartbreaking here. You start listening to this and people being, the government, actually getting people to believe this stuff. And I'm not saying that you used to have a different stand, it's going to go away, but you're going to have a different idea about how wrong it is what they're doing and be able to tell them, no, you don't have that jurisdiction. You don't have that kind of power. The very word used in the other lawsuit. Very good. I don't know that they're going to get at it the right way, but very good anyway. This section of the field, I don't know if I will even plant it, she said. I am potentially just going to put in a cover crop and build up the soil while I live in limbo to see what's going to happen with water rights. But they're talking about groundwater rights. The government of Oregon claims since 1909 they own all the rights. Well, I tell you, they're savings clauses. They only own what they can own and nothing more. So along the same lines here, there has to be, by rule, some water that came appurtenant to the land disposal that has to be regarded. And remember what I said this earlier, just bringing it back up, the last few weeks, the administrative rule that has the savings clause, unless otherwise provided by law, that can impose the rules and dispute resolution and everything through an agency, unless otherwise provided by law. That's an obligation on that agency. So these rules are supposed to look at what came with the land, and those are what you see as exemptions against imposition of the rule, and they've made them. So this is where you got to be careful. If they made them, there's nothing more to say. They've fulfilled, unless you have a challenge to the amount, which I would in this case, then you just be quiet about that and just accept what they have offered as an exempted use. And this lady's telling us, eventually we'll get to that, that she doesn't even use that exempted use. And she's gotten a cease and desist letter to not use that water. And so now she's placed into this non-use state. That's a war crime. She's imposed, extorted, coerced, in a right that Congress granted her to do. So this exemption, if it isn't what the disposal provided for, the land grant disposal provided for when the agency violated the savings clause, the administrative rule, then you get to, that triggers your response to challenge them. In other words, they're stealing from you right off the bat. This is not an administrative matter either. That's why they can go to federal court. But this shouldn't even be an attack on the state level either. Again, peace and settlement. The law brings the peace. When you are not in peace, there is a war being waged against you, clearly. You know them when you see them. These matters also, these land disposals, are a matter of case-by-case land disposal basis. The agency here has no authority to enforce a blanket cease and desist as they are. In fact, if I understand right, this is the story where they sent out 24 of these letters of cease and desist. And they don't even know what the use is. Boy, how far wrong it is. So these serving clauses, which I routinely and regularly mention, are needed to challenge the authority of the department. There is a savings clause, as I said, in the much-touted 1909 law that the state uses to claim the groundwater. And so that law can only be true unless otherwise provided by law. And so this is where you start to look, how you can look back in the history of your laws. It goes all the way back to your patents, and actually back to the creation of the state, and we'll get a little bit to that. The law is here that can only be true unless unless they can show how there isn't another word, a law that exempts, that prohibits them. The report here discusses the limitations of the agency by its rule exemptions, as we read here, and they cite this 1909 and try to give a plausible reason why they have to be involved, and some of it can be plausible. I don't want to dismiss some of this. You have an aquifer and there's too much pumping, you're not going to have the water you think you have because they're just not that. But there's another provision about this as well. So if you can't put a blanket thing on these uses until you, as a state, you understand what your aquifer is doing anyway. But as they say here, they're claiming it's a finite resource, says Mike McCord, the Northwest Regional Manager of the Oregon Water Resources Department. Quote, the system of appropriation has been in place since 1909 in Oregon. It allows us to better manage the resource by having a permitting system, unless otherwise provided by law. So he said, the story here, the report, there are some exemptions, as those without a water right can use up to 5,000 gallons a day for commercial or industrial purposes. However, this doesn't include irrigation. So remember what they just identified. Just for commercial or industrial is their limit of their jurisdiction. It doesn't attach to disposed land uses that are not commercial or industrial, although they provided for a 5,000-gallon use. You'd have to look at your land and say, what was my use when I got here? Without this rule, as a land disposed to me for the purpose of agriculture, not a business of farming, not industrial, not commerce, production. Now, if I understand this correctly, this situation, this doesn't include irrigation because the rule is about groundwater use. It's how you use the water is in the fulfillment of the use of the land that was disposed is not within the power. In other words, you get to determine how you're going to use that water. And so then I read the article and I see what appears to be a misinterpretation in the article by the landowner, which indicates the wanton disregard of this situation by the agency acting without evidence of wrongdoing. They just imposed. They don't have a base of knowledge of what the aquifer does, and they haven't analyzed to see what that use was as disposed to, I would call this woman, an assignee of the patent. But we can read for Del Campo, it's a frustrating double standard. She estimates she was using fewer than 1,000 gallons a day for agriculture. I'm not overusing water. I'm not overusing land, said Del Campo. I'm just trying to have a small business and provide my community with food. And so she's made some verbal, oral statement missteps right there. But she's saying that she's not even using the exemption. Why did she get a cease and desist letter? If she got that cease and desist letter, it's issued without authority. I mean, she uses like one-fifth, by her estimation, of the rule exemption for the use of the water, if it's applicable. And without questioning whether the rule amount was actually adequate under her rights for her land disposal rights as granted and the appurtenant rights to the land grant, we just accept this. She's already said she should fit underneath the exemption that the government should have recognized, and she shouldn't be burdened. It's not even burdened, more too burdensome. It's that she's burdened at all. And the agency moved without lawful due process, just a presumption that they have control of this water. They forget to look at the savings clauses. So if receiving the notice of cease and desist where her use is less than exemption in the limit, the agency has no objective evidence of the water use, and there is no right in the government to impose meters on this either for non-commercial uses like they're trying to do, and they actually found out that they can't. They have to back off on that every time they try to push it. But she is now, because of that notice, she's unsettled in her right of peaceful enjoyment without warrant in law just in receiving such a notice. And if that is a general cease and desist notice, this is a worse on the part of the state, proving total disregard of this rule, due process, and of the law. Absolutely wrong. The land patent is the law, folks. You've heard me say this. It's evidence, ultimate evidence of that law, of the land. The land patent is so much the law that even a judge of this particular state is prohibited from interfering with what the patent, ultimately evidences. On its face, it says forever. It's a long time. So if you're interested in reading such a prohibition, you'll find it maybe for your state. If it's there, you can go read ORS 12.040, Oregon Statute, Revised Statute 12.040. And then we see, does the executive branch state agency have more power than a judge for law? No, not at all. And the executive branch state agency cannot do in law what is prohibited to a judge from doing. Now, why is a judge prohibited? Because if any judge could alter a land patent, it would breach the fulfillment of the law by Congress and the obligations and duties of the state in protecting the soil disposals agreed to in the state's enabling act called the Admissions Act of 1859 for the state of Oregon, which is a treaty between the Congress and the state that cannot be changed. I was shocked to hear that. I didn't think all this stuff could be changed. No, this is the one that can't be changed. And the soil disposal was granted to Congress because the people at the time knew they didn't want any lingering remaining interest in the state. And so they let a third party take care of soil disposal and public land, or now dispose or interest dispose our public domain. I've talked about this early on in my broadcast, and because not many miners came together, I just moved away and periodically I touched this stuff. But today we're talking about other producers called ranchers and farmers. They want to call themselves ranchers and farmers in business, but you're not. You are patentees of agricultural entry. So if the notice of cease and desist and the notices here of cease and desist did not explain why the agency hasn't provided otherwise in law, as the law says, that is that it's authorized to give a notice, it's in violation. Or how evidentiarily the water use is outside the congressional land grant as evidence in the land patent, it has no authority. And it is the notice would be then faulty and a trespass to one's right to peaceful settlement. And further, as explained prior about these felony extortions and coercions, that these are other things that need to be, there are other things here that need to be asserted on top of those against any notice of an agency seeking to regulate disposed entry, use, or peaceful enjoyment. It sounds like it's a repetition, but they're not. They're different aspects of how and what you can challenge and what the state's obligated to be looking at so that we don't have to be engaged. The law of the country is that the people are sitting in peace. When you see that we're not, despite the saving clauses, you're at war with these same governments. We're in a different question, but we'll go there. Hit it lightly here and there. I also want to caution people, you'll hear what I'm saying, you're going to find what I'm saying. It doesn't necessarily mean you win when you also have to properly apply it. You don't have to go on and on. But you need to state the proper things, and the savings clauses will kind of guide that, although they're just a short phrase. As I said, go back to your land patent. If there's no limitation other than for your use, or there's a described use, you can calculate what that should be. It may be simple just to accept the 5,000 gallons. For the time being, I think I would, if that feeds, that waters your land, and it's sufficient. Again, an aquifer that's limited, you're going to have problems anyway. This happened when they started growing pot. The pot growers came in, used tons and tons of water. Pretty soon, everyone's having to drive their wells down. Well, okay, unless you can replenish it, everyone's going to have to start spending money, and that's not very good, and you need to come together and figure that one out. But different question here. We're not quite doing that. The state's just creating a problem that they haven't been able to prove. Again, just notice a cease and desist. No evidence of the use. And a testimony from her that it wasn't very much at all. So some of the things to bring to bear in immediately challenging the jurisdiction of the water department are these laws, the savings clauses, the 1899 savings clause, the 1899 law. You have the enabling act called the Emissions Act. You have the land patent, which is the evidence of what you're supposed to be granted by Congress that cannot be taken away from you, that cannot be interfered with in being able to fulfill what's evidence in that. So be aware that knowledge here then, as I'm saying, is not power. Unless it can be put into that proper action. Understand what that is for yourself. Not that complicated, but it's just direct. It's like equity. You just tell them what your title is, and you prove it. And you say, why'd you run past that by doing your impositions? The first step would be to challenge the jurisdiction of the agency to start administrative process, which must be exhausted before any action can take place. On the other hand, for those that can show the property and rights infringements, that are immediate and irreparable harms to the property and appurtenant rights, they can be acted upon judicially immediately through such actions as injunction, which is an equity action. And understand that's not at law when you're looking at damage. You're trying to stop someone. An equity action stops them. It can, and the government's supposed to protect that. On the other hand of all this, it appears that these are still in administrative rule proceedings, so people need to assert their property rights and challenge the agency for jurisdiction and authority to interfere if they're going to try. And one would use those savings clauses to cause that question and say, you had the obligation to show and you didn't. Your notice didn't have these requirements here. You didn't comport to protect my land rights as Congress granted and the state obliged itself, where in those enabling acts, the obligation of that state is to develop production, not to curtail it or diminish it because of all this as well. You have another challenge. Or they have no right to fraudulently mischaracterize the production as commerce or industrial use, as people do themselves, saying, I'm in business. You're not. You might be able, you have the right to produce, and you have a right to dispose of that production, those foods, and that's your right. It's not in commerce. It doesn't go to commerce until you sell it to someone that then puts it into commerce. But contrary to popular belief, these agriculture entries are not small businesses. That's a taxpayer-type mentality. But that's another violation that people, I mean, I don't know if we'll ever get to that one, but that's where this stuff comes from. Now, the right to produce from the land and dispose that product is already included in the grant of the land, with the evidence being in the patent, which the state is obligated here, as I said, to protect, before it does anything else against anyone utilizing this function. The agency will, or utilizing their, enjoying their rights and utilizing their land as granted to them. The agency will say those are in the exemptions that they've offered, but remember, one size cannot fit all that way, and that's a challenge done case by case, property by property, but there's a whole lot more here behind that. But at least make the record for your initial challenge. That's what's most important here relative to what they're doing. And the people that are just don't know what to do. They're just astonished that this is coming down, and it is against our food. And as it occurs to me, if memory serves, when the state here finds depletion of an occurring, in this case for water, potentially, it is in the public interest to develop more water. I was kind of shocked to see this written. It's actually in the I think it's the 1899, but I don't remember, where they are to develop the water. It's an obligation of the state. Not about to come at you. And so there are ways to do that, interestingly, as I learned as we were doing this study. But on the other hand, it's not in the public interest to attack or limit producers before the state works to develop the water in any case of these. So they have to really, you can challenge them to show what they did to develop the water. And I don't remember now where I've read it, but keep an eye out for that. Keep your study open. Like I said, the 1899 water law in Oregon is maybe a place. If even if you're not in Oregon, go find these laws as I talk about them. Reference to them so you see what I'm saying. You can get familiar with that. So when you go to your state, you can see how this works and see how they phrased it all there. So the 1899 water law that predates the 1909 that the state relies on is an interesting source of laws and restrictions upon government, which is saved in that 1909 law. The savings clauses, again, it's passed through legislation they cannot interfere with. It's part of the obligations and duties based on the very creation of the states themselves. So that same 1899 law stops at the claim that it is an absolute right what the state claims about their possession of that water. And so that's what I'm saying, these pass-throughs, these savings clauses say otherwise, like the 1899 water law explains more. For instance, miners here have very interesting rights there in that law, in which ruled instead of a usurpation by bar association saying that they can be beat up by the Clean Water Act of the state. That can't actually be applied when you go read that 1899 law. Again, mining is a production, not a commerce as well. Then you can consider the water for mining isn't considered consumptive. That's another point most people don't understand, not necessarily for agriculture, but you see there's pass-through protections that they have to honor. So therefore, the water law is subject to the one that you, in 1909, is only the subject matter of consumptive use. It is not applicable in any regard to a miner at all. But most miners don't even understand this stuff. And so these are the types that you look around and find for you, the sorts of challenges that, to the authority which you can bring. And if one knows about these provisions, then you can assert them. But the state is supposed to enforce them before it acts in any way. So that's the problem. They don't look close enough to do this. No, you're a big club and they're going to beat you like a baby seal. So because of that, we the people don't enjoy this presumption anymore. I don't know why. But we should, and the only way to get that back is to assert your rights here. And then we go as well, keeping ahead of production problems here, the state, where a depleting resource such as water cannot be developed, and the state is not to guess either, but honestly assess the capacity of the aquifer, and if memory serves, they then divide that resource fairly among the common users and not in a diminishment lower than the grant if they can, they have to, with the land disposal relative to each type of user. It would be likely apportioned by acre of land, not the use. In other words, corporate is not favored or by fraudulent mischaracterization of an agricultural entry as commercial or industrial over the agricultural entries with the same pertinent rights to the groundwater. They have to look at this honestly. The commercial aspect is really an extraordinary use, maybe on top. But it's still a use. They can't allow someone else to use more than they ought to just because they're a commerce thing and deny you as a property owner. But because the government has lost its way on all this, and partly with the help of these unscrupulous attorneys, lobbyists, as why people, which should be at peaceful settlement, they need to protect themselves, providing public notice of the limits of that agency authority in the public record. That's one way to do that. Albeit, still, it's a violation given the binding obligation and duty upon the state to ensure peaceful obligation, settlement, and use, that the state is to develop that production, again, not curtail it or diminish it, or fraudulently mischaracterize it, that land use grant production as something other than that, and mischaracterize it commercial or industrial. And again, contrary to the popular belief, I want to remind you that these agricultural entries are not actually small businesses. You have a granted right that Congress granted you to do. That's not commerce. That's not a business. It's production. The right to produce and dispose is already included in the grant disposal of the land. And so you start learning the basics. I know I went kind of quick. Put your paperwork to challenge, and hopefully you start to get, if more people did this, the state's going to have to rectify the problem. But I haven't talked too much about it. I did mention a little bit that there's takings, things that are going on. When your land was granted for agricultural use and they're taking part of that, that's a taking. They have to compensate that. But then your question is, what's the highest public interest? Is it to destroy the producer, or is it to allow the producer, like the law says, and to then look at what the real problem was? I hope something I said will help y'all protect your lands. This is applicable in lots of other states and lots of other things. The same disposal of land is there. I've been talking about it for years. And until we understand that we don't, in some regard, we shouldn't have to leave our land fallow when it was granted to us in whole to enjoy the entirety. We can start showing the agencies they've gone a bridge too far. They shouldn't use the bridge at all. They should stay on their side and let producers produce, let them take their stuff to dispose of it where people need it and provide the good quality food that we need, which, you know, the agenda, the future that they want, they don't want you healthy. Whatever your thought about raw milk is. And again, knowing a friend who has done that, it's a job. And the milk that he would provide to me seemed never to cause a problem. And so, I guess everyone's experience may be different, but that's up to us to be able to do. But getting sick on that stuff is not a good deal. But these folks that I understood, they take a much higher regard. They don't try to hide their product underneath pasteurization and try to pasteurize or to ultra blend the nonsense that's in normal milk, the commercial milk. But anyway, I hope I said something here to help you. Pass the word. Get this thing out. Tell people they're not helpless, these landowners. 1,000 gallons, that lady should be pumping water. Grow your crops. Thank you, you know, for doing the fallow. Thank you for improving your soil. But don't go when you're underneath that exemption and don't want to fight that, don't put yourself into want. That's what they want for their harvest. I'll be with you next week. Tech Diffs for Nature Willing. This is BTW RLM 570.
Well, that's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, Journey with Purpose.
foot opening up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, I just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.